Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And today, we're going to mix it up, both local and national sports. How about the breaking news earlier today? Bob Stoops, after 18 years at Oklahoma, retiring effective immediately. He has stepped down. He made this announcement today. The quote, after 18 years at the University of Oklahoma, I decided to step down as head football coach. This is what Stoops said in a statement. I feel the timing is perfect to hand over the reins. The program is in tremendous shape. We have outstanding players and coaches and are poised to make another run at a Big 12 and national championship. Stoops will be succeeded by 33-year-old Lincoln Riley, who has served as offensive coordinator under Stoops for the past two seasons. Stoops will remain as a special assistant to the athletic director. He said he did not base his decision on health reasons and that there are no incidents that would prevent him from coaching. A high-ranking Oklahoma athletic department official told ESPN Stoops' decision was not an overnight revelation. The source also said that Stoops' father, Ron, suffered a heart attack and died while coaching a high school game in the late 80s, and Stoops has always had that in his mind. The source also said Stoops did not want to get to the point to where the school forced him out, adding that he doesn't expect Stoops to coach again at any level. And I would agree with that. He's had such success at Oklahoma, and he's already 57 years old. Well, he'll be 57 years old. Winningest coach in the program's history. 190 wins, won 79% of his games. He's gone 121-29 in Big 12 play. He's taken the Sooners to a bowl game in every one of his 18 years, going 9-9, capped off by last year's 35-19 win over Auburn. Like, that's impressive right there. He's never had a season where Oklahoma was not bowl eligible. 190 victories ranks fourth amongst FBS coaches, behind Brian Kelly, Bill Snyder, and Nick Saban. And he's coached two Heisman winners, Jason White and Sam Bradford. That guy's a legend, and he's walking away from OU. Somewhat sad. I know we're going to be talking a lot about OU football in the coming days. This was breaking news earlier today. Bob Stoops stepping away from Oklahoma football after 18 years. Tonight, we get Golden State and Cleveland. We talked a lot about the lack of parity and the entertainment value in this NBA championship. Look, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. It is intriguing. It's still intriguing. The fact that Golden State has blown Cleveland out games 1 and 2. And when you take the 8 quarters that they played, even though they split the season set in the regular season, if you take the 8 quarters that they played, it has overwhelmingly favored Golden State. The Warriors are just 3.5-point favorites in tonight's game. I picked Golden State to win the series in 5 at the beginning of the finals. I gave Cleveland game 3. They don't get this win tonight, the series is over in 4. And come Monday, we're talking about the NBA offseason. No question in my mind. We'll talk more NBA basketball coming up in just a bit. There is a lot of news today circulating in the NFL, and we will begin with the New York Giants. Odell Beckham Jr. has not shown up for organized team activities, and according to Adam Schefter of ESPN, it is directly related to his desire for a new contract. Beckham has been one of several Giant players who have missed the voluntary offseason workouts, and that's key when talking about this. Voluntary offseason workouts. I don't know that this is necessarily a huge story in the NFL, because you see guys miss voluntary workouts every year for contract disputes. It's happening in Los Angeles with Aaron Donald. He's probably going to be the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. He's not showing up to voluntary workouts, wants to get a deal done. Odell Beckham is going to be a very similar situation here. He does not have a financial bonus tied to attending the workouts this offseason, so there's not a whole lot of incentive for him to be there in the first place. It was back on May 25th. We go back a couple of weeks ago. Beckham told the NFL Network that, quote, "I love my team and I'm excited about the season," and that he would for sure report to the mandatory minicamp, which begins on Tuesday. So while these are stories, they don't become issues until players start missing the mandatory minicamps. That's when holdouts start affecting team chemistry. The Giants are going to reward Odell Beckham Jr. handsomely. He's actually scheduled to make $1.8 million this season based off that rookie contract. They picked up his fifth-year option for 2018, and that's likely to be around $8 million. So the Giants are getting a steal on Odell Beckham. I'm really iffy on this kind of stuff when you talk about the NFL, because it's a sport where many of the contracts are not guaranteed. And we talk about contract signings for the like of someone that signs a $100 million deal. I always bring up the same contract. When Darrelle Revis signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it was a $99 or $90 million contract. None of that was guaranteed. Not a penny of it. So I understand where these superstars come off attempting to get as much money as possible. This is not an issue until Odell Beckham starts missing the mandatory training camps. Let's take a look at some of the other news circulating in the NFL. Kirk Cousins, he's on track to land a deal with Washington. That's according to reports, once again, that surfaced earlier today. Kirk Cousins and the Redskins have been engaging in positive contract negotiations. One reason for the positive outlook is that Dan Snyder has gotten involved, making it known just how much Washington actually wants to re-sign Cousins. And they had several opportunities to move on from Cousins in the offseason. You take a look at the current quarterback situation in the NFL, I guarantee you that Kirk Cousins was a hot commodity and they could have moved him if they wanted to. There is belief that if the deal does not get done before the deadline for franchise players next month, it will still be challenging for the two sides to get a deal done, but it seems that both sides are interested in making Kirk Cousins the long-term quarterback for the Washington Redskins. So that's a couple of storylines that have circulated throughout the NFL today. We will talk plenty of NBA on the show with Game 3 taking place tonight, but here's a draft story for you. Lonzo Ball, I mean, obviously this guy is the most intriguing player in the NBA draft. A lot of it has to do with his dad. The Lakers are going to have a private workout with Lonzo Ball today. Lonzo Ball's dad, LaVar Ball, is not invited to the workout. Luke Walton told Jim Rome this yesterday that Ball's father wouldn't be permitted at the workout, but that he was welcome to join them for dinner last night, the night before. Walton also said that LaVar Ball's personality and his outspokenness would not affect the Los Angeles Lakers and if they select Lonzo or not. And this is a story and a topic that gets brought up a lot. I've been asked, do you really want the headache of LaVar Ball by drafting Lonzo? This is not AAU basketball. This is not high school. This is not junior high. This isn't JUCO. Parents are irrelevant at the professional level. Now, does LaVar Ball amplify the spotlight on Lonzo? Absolutely. But I think Lonzo Ball is a true talent. I think this kid is going to be very, very good in the NBA. Watching as much Pac-12 basketball as I do, I was totally impressed with this kid. Not saying he's better than Markelle Fultz, because Fultz is spectacular, and I think Fultz is hands down the number one selection in this NBA draft. But Lonzo is going to be very, very good, and I don't care anything about his father, and I'm telling you, any team that selects him will not care about his father either. At the professional level, that's irrelevant. Now, another draft story. A report has broke that the Sacramento Kings are willing to trade up for De'Aaron Fox. I'm going to also say maybe even Lonzo Ball. The Kings are in a very good position. They have picks number 5 and number 10. So they actually have a lot of ammo to move up. They could really get as high as number 2 with the Lakers. I think that's a very strong possibility. If the Lakers are not blown away by Lonzo Ball, you trade down, you get 5 and 10, there's more ammunition for the Lakers to strike a deal. The Kings have zeroed in on De'Aaron Fox, and they may actually move up if they have to select De'Aaron Fox. A couple of stories circulating throughout the national sports scene. We do have day baseball going on right now as well. Clayton Kershaw and Steven Strasburg were going at it. A phenomenal pitching matchup. The game took place at 1 o'clock has started, so we're nearing the end of that one. We'll try to get you a scoreboard update a little bit later on in the show. We take a look at the scheduled baseball games tonight. 5:05 start time. Pittsburgh on the road to take on Baltimore. The Yankees will play host to the Red Sox. We get the Angels on the road against Detroit. The Reds play host to St. Louis. The White Sox on the road to take on Tampa Bay. And the Braves welcome in Philadelphia. 6 o'clock hour, the Mets at the Rangers. The Marlins take on the Cubs. John Lackey on the hill tonight for Chicago. The Giants will battle Milwaukee. Houston on the road to take on Kansas City. 7 o'clock hour, San Diego at Arizona. And in the nightcap tonight, Seattle plays host to Minnesota. It's a quick rundown of everything happening in the national sports scene. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll catch up with USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart. He's actually at the Region 18 meetings in Las Vegas right now, the business aspect of college sports. We'll talk to him about that, what actually is discussed at these meetings, and we'll get a time frame on some of the renovations going on at USU Eastern. Plus, we'll preview Game 3 of the NBA Finals. It's all coming up right here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. After being named to the 3A All-State team this past fall, Riker Smith represented Carbon High School well with a second-place performance in the Utah High School All-State Invitational last Tuesday at the Fox Hollow Golf Course in American Fork. Matched against the best golfers from all five classifications, Smith finished in a three-way tie for second as he shot a 68, finishing four strokes under par. Smith, Zach Neff of Olympus, and Tyler Jones from Lone Peak also finished with a 68. Zach Jones, also of Lone Peak, finished at the top of the leaderboard with a 67. Michael Walters of Juan Diego rounded out the top five with a 69. Competing against 37 other All-State golfers, Smith proved to be one of the elites in the entire state heading into his senior campaign. During his junior season, Smith helped lead the Dinos to a region championship, the Eastern Utah Cup, and a top five finish at the 3A state tournament. We move over to American Legion Baseball, and today the Price Legion squad will look to get their first league victory of the season as they play host to Vernal in doubleheader action beginning at 4 p.m. at the USU Eastern Baseball Complex. Price opened up the season this past Saturday against St. George, and they suffered not one but two losses after dropping the first game 15-0. Price kept it close for four innings before St. George pulled away late in a 15-1 decision. Remington Mott delivered the highlight of the weekend for Price. He finished 3-7 at the plate. Right now, Price is at the bottom of the Southern Division at 0-2. Again, they would need to finish inside the top eight to advance to the state championship tournament. There is plenty of time to right the ship, and today would be a right step in the direction for Price. Again, start time is set for 4 and 6 p.m. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Carbon High School Athletic Director and Girls Basketball Coach Ted Bianco. Coach Bianco was a guest to put the final touches on the 2017 spring sports season. And as we transition into the summer months, fall sports are right around the corner. Coach Bianco also talked about the recent news, which involved Superintendent Steve Carlson taking a new position in Box Elder. Bianco says the subtraction of Carlson as the district superintendent will definitely be felt in the athletics program.
Well, he's been a very strong supporter of Carbon High Athletics, and he's been a champion for that over his six-year tenure in our district. And it's kind of been refreshing to see someone that comes in that wants to have a strong academic program in our district, as well as strong extracurricular activities.
There are some changes taking place within the Carbon High School Athletics Department as well. This year, there will be a new volleyball coach, and with the volleyball season just around the corner, summer camps are already in session. The new head coach will be Julia Chattel, who is taking over for Kristen Johnson. Johnson served as the head volleyball coach over the past 2 years. Bianco talked about Chattel taking over the helm.
Julia Chattel will be our new volleyball coach. She was an assistant with Kristen Johnson last couple years, and she'll be taking over the volleyball program.
You can listen to this complete interview by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com and clicking on the Drive Time Sports link. And today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, beginning at 4 p.m., we'll be joined by USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart, who is currently attending athletic meetings in Nevada. He'll give us an update on those meetings, talking about how they could directly impact USU Eastern. And we'll also talk Game 3 of the NBA Finals, which is taking place tonight from Cleveland. The Golden State Warriors will look to put a stranglehold on the Cavaliers. They currently hold a 2-0 lead in the series. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And today we're going to talk USU Eastern Athletics. Now, unfortunately, when baseball and softball came to a close, we're kind of stuck with no sports up until soccer, which is really right around the corner. And then we'll start moving into the fall sports season. Joining us right now over the phone to talk about USU Eastern Athletics in general, we have Vice Chancellor Greg Dart, who is actually on the road in Vegas at the moment attending Region 18 meetings. Greg, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Region 18 meetings. Explain to me, what exactly do you guys talk about at these conference meetings now that the calendar sports season is over?
Yeah, so every June this happens, and that's because it's what we call the dead time of the sports season. Although there's a ton of activity, as you can imagine, still going on during the dead time, but no competition. But every year at this time, the athletic directors and athletic administrators from each of the institutions get together, finalize schedules, finalize how things work, things like how letters of intent and scholarships are working at each institution, travel and any significant changes there. The national meetings that I came in and talked to you about back in April when I went, the things that happened there have impact here. And then on Monday, all of the head coaches from each institution were here for an eligibility seminar to make sure that nobody gets put in eligibility jail for the NJCAA, just to make sure everybody knows the rules, make sure they know what they're doing. And so it's very much a business meeting. But if you look at the agenda for the few days that we're here, there's page upon page upon page of topics that need to be hammered out before things start back up in August.
Yeah, that's why I find this so interesting. There is a business aspect to the game that the casual fan or the spectator, even the hardcore fans and spectators, they don't get to see because it's behind the scenes. It's like going into a restaurant and you don't know how the sausage is actually cooked.
And it's really interesting when you're dealing with intercollegiate athletics, because there are a whole different layers. You know, in professional athletics, you're talking about revenues and you're talking about bottom lines and collective bargaining agreements and things that all deal with the dollars and cents of it, where this is a completely different dynamic, especially on the junior college setting, where you're talking about a national office of less than a dozen people, and they're running this huge organization. And then the regions and the athletic directors within those regions have so much that they have to work out specific to their region based on what happens nationally. And so, when I jumped into this just a few years ago, I thought I understood kind of what happened behind the scenes, but I had no clue. And there's a lot of work that goes in.
Yeah, there definitely is, and you're the guy for the job. I mean, you get to travel around, and you get to embark in a lot of these meetings. It's a 2-day set, is that correct?
That is correct. So Monday started with all our coaches, and then 2 days of these meetings. So.
Again, our guest right now is USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart. Again, he is in Nevada attending the Region 18 meetings. Outside of that, Greg, let's talk about USU Eastern Athletics and what happened on the field and on the court. If we go back, we look at baseball, we look at softball. The first softball season is now in the books. Now that it's over and you guys have had a chance to actually sit back and assess how it went, what's your assessment on it? I mean, how do you believe the first season for softball went?
Well, I felt like we really put out a good product. We had a great coach team. We had a team that was competitive and that improved significantly by the end of the year, which I think is what you're looking for. But I don't think I even realized what amazing of a job it was until I got to these meetings. And some of the other athletic directors and those who are over softball just couldn't believe what the team came out and did. Won their first game in the region tournament, were competitive against other teams in the region tournament. You know, they really stepped their game up as the year went on. And when you look at what our team had as far as preparation compared to other teams, it's unbelievable what they were able to get to by the end of the year. We didn't have quite the preseason that we thought. There were a couple of things that played into that. And then we had a crazy winter that, our team was shoveling off a field just to get it to where they could be practicing about a month later than they anticipated. And so it was a really exciting season, and by the end, nobody wanted to play our team because they were clicking at the right time.
We'll rewind the hands of time. 2 years ago, when you came into the studio and we talked about USU Eastern adding softball, if I would have told you in your first season you're going to get a tournament victory over Southern Nevada, what would you have said?
I would have said, I'll take it right now. I'll walk out while I'm ahead. Because, I mean, it was a start to finish victory. It was, a well played game, and then battled in the next few.
Now, unfortunately for baseball, their season ended a little bit differently. I mean, it was a single elimination tournament, basically, for them. They had to get past the playing game with Colorado, and they didn't. And we've talked to Coach Madsen, and we've put the final touches on the baseball season. But my question to you is, is there any room for change within baseball structure at the moment? Because one of the big topics is the fact that this team had to play on the road 6 consecutive weeks. It was a one-loss play-in game to get into the conference tournament. That didn't work out in our favor, while every other team basically had a double elimination tournament. And so things just really seemed to stack up against USU Eastern this past season. Can we expect change in the next year or so before another team is added to the conference? Or are we looking at it is what it is at this moment?
No, I think there are a couple of those pieces that are potential for change. And the way that things work, baseball and softball always play opposite each other. Baseball's at home, softball's on the road. And because of the late addition when it goes into scheduling of softball, it puts baseball's schedule into a pretty tough position. But it's something that we've dealt with the last couple of years. And if you look at the cycle of the team, you'll see that there are years where the schedule is very favorable and there are years where the schedule is not at all. That's something that we were actually working through yesterday and today. The other piece we talk about, a double elimination, a true double elimination tournament, is something that's up for vote down here as well, because that's an area where I think there's potential to have some benefit for teams. Right now, it's not a true double elimination because there is that play-in game. There is a challenge, of course, with a schedule that has five teams, and Snow College is in a tough position with football, that a tough Title IX position, that adding baseball is problematic for them. Unless they were adding an additional women's sport. So I don't see any change coming that way as far as another team, but I do see that the conference is sympathetic. Another discussion, and it's one that it's heating up now more than I've ever heard before, is we're a conference that plays, we're a wood bat league, and that is beneficial in some ways in preparation, but when you look at the national level, the Junior College World Series is played with metal bats. I think it's something that that we, you know, we are going to be consistently looking at, and that change that, you know, could potentially be coming in the next few years.
I'm actually quite shocked that metal and aluminum bats have not been outlawed yet. Like, the wood bat, for all the talk of safety in sports, the wood bat just seems like a more viable option.
Oh, there's absolutely no question. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why you haven't seen any changes with our league is because that's the way it is. But then, you know, our teams get to national competition and are at a disadvantage because you've got pitchers who have pitched to wood bats all year. You've got hitters that have been hitting with a wood bat all year and then are transitioning to a metal bat, and against teams that have played with a metal bat all year. And so it's a tough situation that we're in that way. But for safety alone, wood bats are, I mean, huge. It just is a completely different dynamic when you put an aluminum bat in.
Greg, before I let you go, I do want to talk about soccer, which is not that far off. And every day I drive by the former Durant property and I get to see the progress being made on the soccer field complex. Is there a time frame locked in place yet for the completion there? And if so, how does it coincide with the start of the soccer season itself?
So the soccer complex up on Durant Field, we have that sprinkled. We're seeding that, and so that's going to take a little bit of time to come in. I would be surprised if we're playing on it this season. Not that it won't be ready, but that, you know, how you can give grass a little bit longer and start up in the spring on that surface. It's going to have a lot more longevity and be a lot tougher opponent. So I don't anticipate we'll be playing on it this season. You never know. That's potential. Soccer has a report date of August 1, and so I think our student athletes are coming back August 9th. One thing that has been clarified from the NJCAA is that we have 24 letters of intent for this year, and so there's still been some soccer recruiting going on because that change just took place 6 weeks ago instead of 18, and we thought that was going to be a year removed before we could fill those, but it happened this year. So exciting time for soccer. Met with all the coaches on Monday and kind of set the schedule, made sure everything was set that way. It's still a new sport in our area. I think you'll see soccer adding additional teams before just about any other sport in the conference. College of Southern Idaho is very likely to be adding a soccer team here soon. And then there's been a discussion of other schools that are within the conference footprint, but that do not have sports right now. Truckee Meadows over in Reno is one that is very excited about the possibility of adding soccer.
Greg Dartigan, USU Eastern Vice Chancellor, taking out the time to join us today to give us an update on USU Eastern and NJCAA athletics. Greg, it is always a pleasure. I know you're out of the area, so I do appreciate you taking out the time to call today. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this. We'll move over to Game 3 of the NBA Finals.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard! He got the shot off! Throw it down! And the Blazers win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarino on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Tonight, we have Game 3 of the NBA Finals. And I'm just wondering how long the season's actually going to go. At the beginning, I said it would be Golden State in five. That means we would get NBA basketball up until Monday. But after watching games one and two and really looking at the collective quarter-by-quarter deal between these two teams dating back to the regular season, I've seen nothing that leads me to believe that Cleveland will actually win a game in the series. Joining me right now to talk a bit about that and more, we have Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jameson, always fun to get you on. Thank you for the time again today.
Oh, not a problem. You stole the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I feel very similar with that. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think the Cavs have won three quarters this year versus the Warriors. You know, and that's an issue. That's definitely a problem. But, you know, at the end of the day, we kind of saw this coming defensively. You only win championships defensively. Defensively is where it gets done. And if the Cavs are not going to play better defense, we might as well just get ready for the draft now, because that's where we're at now. The same issues they had in the regular season, the same issues they had versus the Pacers, same issues they had versus the Celtics are all showing up here. But this is a different animal. This is a different beast right here that they're dealing with. And the Warriors are locked and loaded and focused, and it shows.
I don't know what direction Tyronn Lue has to go tonight, Jameson. I really don't. I don't know how you beat Golden State, because, again, this is one of the best teams that I have seen in quite some time. I will say this. The idea of trying to get into a foot race in Game 2, and every time we got a shot of the coach's huddle, Tyronn Lue kept telling him, play fast, but take care of the ball. Play even faster, but take care of the basketball. That is stupid. That's a stupid idea with this Golden State Warrior team. Now, not a lot of people agree with me when I say this would be my game plan for Game 3, so I want your perspective on it. You have to try to slow the tempo down, and that is a lot easier said than done. I mean, that's what Utah Jazz fans thought the Jazz could do against Golden State, and they couldn't do it. But in my mind, Cleveland's best opportunity to win this game, Jameson, is to slow it down to a half-court game offensively, and you let LeBron James bully his way. I want 40 shots from LeBron tonight. I want at least 25 of those inside the paint. You bully them down low. I don't see any other option in this series at this point.
Here's the issue with that. If LeBron's doing all that and has to guard Kevin Durant, by this, like we saw, he got exhausted by the end of the second quarter because he has expended so much energy. If it was 5 years ago, maybe, but you're asking him to do a lot more than he's capable of doing at this point of his career. It sounds good in theory, but when you're missing layups and you're missing easy shots, you're creating fast break points. All that's going to make sure is that if you're going to milk the clock and play slower and all this, all that means the Warriors are going to score 110 instead of 130. That's all that means. Here's the problem. You got to pick and choose your spots. You can't go full, we're going to slow down the pace to a snail's crawl. And you can't go hyperactive, we're going to play with the Warriors. You got to find a happy medium. But you also, your players just got to play better. You know, that's the issue. Your guys got to play better. Tristan Thompson, they're not even guarding him. They're not guarding Shumpert. And J.R. Smith is, I don't know what's going on with him. So they have a lot of issues there. But also, their bench guys, even though their bench is very weak, their bench guys really aren't giving him anything. I mean, you know, Shumpert, their best bench guy, you're in a lot of trouble because he's a guy that, you know, he's an average NBA player, but he's not a guy you want to rely upon in the grand scheme. He's not a guy you want to have to count on game in and game out. He's a good defender, but offensively, they're leaving him open. They're going under every screen. They're letting him shoot from outside. If he scores, it's a bonus. They'll live with that. But with that being said, defensively is where it's at. Defensively, you can't defend. If you're giving up 40 points in the first quarter and 35 points in the first quarter, you have no shot.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of the reason why Tristan Thompson has been rendered useless, nearly useless in the series, the fact that he had 4 rebounds in Game 2 is completely inexcusable. Now, if you watch that game, every time a ball is in the air, Golden State is throwing 2 individuals at Tristan Thompson. They are doing everything they can to limit his production on the glass. So, again, this is a team that has the talent. And, Jameson, the one thing that stands out to me is they're so much deeper. Last season, when it was 3-1, Golden State was up, and you start looking at possible lineup changes. And I remember the talk was, you know what, they got Timothy Mozgov on the bench, who's a big body. Maybe put him in and bang a little bit and try to change the tempo. There's nobody on the bench this year for Cleveland that you can honestly take off of the pine, put into the starting lineup, or swap minutes and have someone come off the bench and play 35 outside of maybe Shumpert for J.R. Smith. There is no other option on this bench. You don't get better.
And Shumpert had to get an IV after game, too, because
exactly.
He was playing more minutes than he was accustomed to.
Exactly. Exactly. They don't have the depth in the series. And I think you can just tell and the way LeBron James is answering questions, the way he's walking off of the court, the way his body language is very reminiscent. And I'm not picking on LeBron because, again, this guy's a top 10 player of all time. I think he's still the best player in the world. I'm not picking on him. But his attitude is very reminiscent of his final season in Cleveland, the year he walked off the court, took his jersey off against Boston. I'm seeing the same tendencies right now in that LeBron James, and that's scary, knowing that there's still potentially, you know, six games remaining in the set, or four games remaining in the set. I mean, that's scary.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Also, the thing people are failing to realize, the Warriors' defense has been more impressive than their offense. You know, that's the thing that's been, for me anyway, that should be the focal point. But also, the Warriors haven't played a great game yet. They've had good moments, they've had good spurts, but they've probably played a B-minus type of game, and they're destroying the series. They haven't played their A-plus game. I think that's still to come. I think they have a game where they don't turn the ball over, and they're sharp on offense and defense, and they really stick it to the Cavs. I think that game is coming. I really do. I don't know if it's going to be tonight or Friday night, but I think that game is coming. When it does, the series will be over. But I really do. I think after the embarrassment the Warriors went through last year, I think the Warriors are going to start treating the Cavs like they do the Clippers, to where every game they come out, they're going to try to embarrass them and try to make it look really bad on them. I think that's what we're going to start seeing. But the Cavs just don't have the pieces. At the end of the day, they don't have the pieces to contend. And also, you know, some of the guys they're relying upon, they have role players that are very expensive, and that they can use that money in other directions. You know, you got J.R. Smith making like $15 million, Tristan making around $18. That $33 million, that can go in different directions for guys that aren't so limited. Both of those guys are very limited players in what they bring you. And when you have that much money tied up in limited players at another 10 for Shumpert, that's really going to halt any kind of conversation of you going back-to-back or doing anything special, because you just can't do it with having that much money tied into very limited guys that aren't getting better.
No, I agree 100%. Jameson Welsh, BelieveTheHypeNBA.com, our guest right now. Jameson, we'll talk about 16-0. It's a very real possibility. Now, one team that came extremely close was the Los Angeles Lakers back in 2001. They went 15-1 because at that time we had best of five first round contests, not best of seven. The Lakers go 15-1. The lone game they lose, game one of the NBA Finals. Tyronn Lue was involved in that, the famous step over from Allen Iverson. But they go 15-1. Last year, Golden State wins 73 games, and they don't win an NBA championship. And the storyline at the end of last year's regular season was, what's a bigger moment? The Warriors looking for win 73 or Kobe's last game? And I said Kobe's last game because if you don't win an NBA championship, in my mind, it doesn't matter. Now, Warrior fans argue with me on that all the time. I don't care that they won 73 games last season. They didn't win an NBA championship. To me, 16-0 in the playoffs is not only much more rewarding, but that's ultimately what the regular season is for. We play three seasons in the NBA. You have a preseason, a regular season, and the postseason. 16-0 will definitely trump 73, 74, 75, even 82 wins in my mind, and they have a clear shot of getting to 16-0. Unbelievable when you think about it.
Well, I disagree with 73 wins. I still think that's a crazy accomplishment because it's probably never going to happen again unless the Warriors go out. This Warrior team goes after it and gets it next year. I just think that we will never see that again, especially from a team from the West Coast, having the long road trips, having to travel 5 to 6 hours cross country in certain instances. I think that's a very special accomplishment. They just didn't get it done, but it's still a great accomplishment because 73 games out of 82 is insane. Like, that doesn't even sound right. But with that being said, last year they didn't finish the deal. Especially being up 3-1, they didn't finish the deal for various reasons. Guys start getting hurt. Draymond gets suspended. A lot of things, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And then Harrison Barnes stopped making shots, stopped being productive. So it got kind of tricky from there. With that being said, if they go 16-0, they rewrite their story. You know, they rewrite the story and they kind of change things up, and that's something that would never be able to be taken away from them, because no one's going 16-0 again in the playoffs. Like, that's not happening again. So if they go 16-0, if they run the table the next two nights, then that'll be a very special accomplishment, even though a lot of people think the NBA is watered down and whatnot, but it's a very special accomplishment. I will say this, the Lakers in 0-1, they had a 6-point lead in overtime, and they had a couple turnovers, and it was never the same after that. But they were right there. They should have been the first team to sweep in the playoffs, but it is what it is.
I think at the end of the day, if you don't win at all, it ultimately doesn't matter. That's why 73 wins is a great accomplishment. But I don't think, and I think time will tell. I think 73 wins is still fresh in everyone's mind. But if you go back to the Patriots that went 16-0 and lost to the New York Giants, now that we're, what, close to 10 years removed from that particular Super Bowl, nobody talks about 16-0 anymore. Like, nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about the fact that that team actually went undefeated. We do talk about David Tyree coming down with an insane grab that halted a perfect season. And ultimately, that's what I believe 73 wins in the NBA, that's what we'll view when we look back. A LeBron James unbelievable individual performance in the NBA Finals and the Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead. That overshadows 73 wins.
It overshadows it, but we'll still remember 73 wins a lot more than we do 18-0 or 16-0. I think we'll, because NBA is a little bit different. NFL, we see 15-1 a lot. We see a lot of teams, you know, go that. We see a lot of teams come close to that. We don't see teams winning 70. There's only been three teams that have won, two teams that have won 70 games. All right? We don't see 70 wins come close. That doesn't happen. We see teams get 67, maybe even 68, but we don't see teams getting 70, you know, every year. That doesn't happen. Like, that doesn't happen. So it is a special moment because that's something that, yeah, those two teams might be the only two teams ever to get to 70. With that being said, though, it's not the end-all, be-all. It's not, you don't get any rings or trophies for winning 70-plus games. The main prize is in June, and now I think they've learned how to pace themselves. And the crazy part is this. They remind me of the 0-1 Lakers because the 0-1 Lakers had an injury to one of their guys in the middle of the season, and then they got back right around mid-March. And from mid-March on, it was on. They missed a beat. It really reminds me of the 2001 Lakers, how they only had one loss in like 80 days or something like that. And, yeah, it's really reminiscent of that. They're just dominant. They're a focused group on a mission. And when you have a focused group like this on a mission, it's gonna be trouble. It's gonna be a situation like this.
Despite the fact that game one and two has been so lopsided, Golden State's only favored by 3.5 tonight. Does Cleveland get a win in your mind?
No, because 3.5 on the road is very disrespectful. Like, being favored in the finals on the road by 3.5 is really disrespectful to the home team. With that being said, I like the Warriors, man. They're focused. You can tell in the way they're answering questions and also the way they're playing. Draymond hasn't had one of his Draymond-type games just yet. He's due for a really big game, and I expect him to come through on a triple-double type of night tonight. I think this is over Friday evening.
Jameson Welsh, BelieveTheHypeNBA.com, takes out the time to join us each week and talk NBA basketball. Hopefully next week, I'm hoping that we still have some NBA basketball to talk about, but I believe it's going to be off-season. And, of course, the NBA is now a 365-day, 24/7 sport, so we have plenty to talk about as far as the off-season goes as well. Jameson, always a pleasure. Thank you again for the time today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back for the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Listen to Drive Time Sports weekdays 4 to 5 on News Talk 750 AM KOAL.
A long three from Thompson, and that is an NBA record. His 10th three-pointer of the night. Thompson fires for three. Yes! State by three.
This is Clay Thompson from the Golden State Warriors, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Busterine on KOAL 750 AM.
Less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
We're back for the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show, get a little local sports from Greg Dart. Talking about timelines at USU Eastern for renovations as well. The soccer field, you see the construction going on. I got to drive by it every day. It looks great. It's going to be fantastic once that's finished. Got some insight from Jameson Welsh as well. Game 3 of the NBA Finals tonight. It's a must-win for Cleveland, no doubt about it. Start time for that contest is set for 6 p.m. Right now, we have some local baseball taking place here in the local area. The Price American Legion squad looking to bounce back from two losses. suffered a loss to St. George 15-0 and then 15-1 in a doubleheader this past weekend. Only a few sets of home games. Again, right now, game one is underway. Game two will get rolling at 6 p.m. as they take on Vernal. Both of those contests count towards the Southern Division standings, where 8 out of the top 9 teams move on to the state championship tournament. We'll talk more local sports on the show tomorrow. Again, it's always a pleasure to join you. Make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com for more local sports. Also, you can podcast Drive Time Sports. Just pay to visit CastleCountryRadio.com and click on the Drive Time Sports link. I'm Jordan Buscarini signing off. I'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. I am out. Michael Medved coming up next.